Guests on the horn appear courtesy of the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina is located on Highway 360, just south of West Bank Drive. Chad and Kevin are brought to you by Coors Light.
Time is a flat circle. Of everything we've ever done or will do, we're going to do over and over and over again.
Afternoons with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn.
Don't make me have to separate you two again. Damn it!
On the Horn, 1049 AM 1260 and HornFM.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Afternoon Delight.
Son of a bitch! Give me a drink.
Let's go hour number two on a Thursday. Kevin Dunn is here. I'm Chad Hastings, Trey Elling producing, getting you all the great stuff, the intros, making sure it's running smoothly. Somebody texted us earlier, you guys are barely into the show, you haven't mentioned that Chad clearly put the death jinx on Zion's career. You just had to talk about him being the next superstar. I don't know if I did that. I don't know if that's my fault.
Yeah, you did.
Also, I forgot about this one. Somebody saying, back to the Georgia little stuffed bulldog thing getting thrown, says the best example is when Patrick Ewing was on the line against Syracuse in the Carrier Dome, and a fan threw an orange against the backboard. No technical was issued, just another free throw, but it took a while to sort it out while they cleaned the backboard and Boeheim admonished the crowd. I totally forgot about that.
I remember that in the Big East 30 for 30, maybe.
Okay.
It was, yeah, there were some awful things going on there.
That's a great 30 for 30.
It is.
If you love college hoops, you got to see that one.
Remember how good that Big East was.
Ooh, yeah, great stuff. All right, speaking of great stuff, as I mentioned before the break, we're 8 days from the Combine and 63 days from the NFL Draft. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and talk to Tony Pauline of DraftAnalyst.com. He is at Tony Pauline on Twitter if you want to give him a follow. Tony, how are you?
I'm okay, and it's funny you talk about the Big East, because I actually was a student. I went to college on a track and field scholarship at St. John's University when Chris Mullin.
Oh, nice.
Mark Jackson.
And I was at a lot of those games. I would actually sit behind the basket in the student section, and yeah, they harassed Patrick Ewing over the top. But let me tell you something about this. The Georgia Hoya mascot, who was that little bulldog, He was no saint either. Right? I mean, he used to do some obnoxious things. And when Trangisi used to come up into the crowd and yell at us, I'd point out what the bulldog was doing to behind the St. John's cheerleaders. It doesn't make what they did to Patrick Ewing right, but it was happening from all sides back then, and it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, and it was loaded. And it felt like every team had four or five NBA guys on their team. Was there a Derek Coleman Syracuse team, or one of those Mark Jackson St. John's teams? Was there one that really stood out for you?
Well, I remember the Pearl Washington Syracuse team. Yeah. I remember sitting behind the basket there where Pearl Washington went from baseline to baseline, and I believe he was stuffed by a guy by the name of Ron Washington from St. John's, and St. John's won the Big East the year after they went to the Final Four. Yeah, remember that year when St. John's went to the Final Four, it was St. John's, Villanova, who beat Georgetown in the final game, and it was Memphis, and Boston College lost out. Boston College was a Big East team at the time, lost out to Memphis in the last 10 seconds of the game, or the 85 National Tournament Final Four would have been all Big East teams.
Mm. Oh, wow. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, Tony, we're closing in on the draft, and I know you've done a lot of work on Longhorns and looking at their film. We'll definitely get your thoughts on some Texas guys. But real quick, I don't think we've talked to you since Kyler Murray made everything official, and he's going to be at the Combine, maybe not do all the workouts, but he's going to be there. He's definitely going to be in a part of this draft. Where does he fall realistically for you as you look at putting together mock drafts and everything? Where do you think we're going to see that interest for Kyler Murray?
Right now I have him going number 15 to the Washington Redskins. I mean, the only way he goes earlier is if John Gruden decides, you know, he wants to pull a fast one and he's going to take Kyler Murray at four and trade Derek Carr, and you know, John Gruden figures he's going to go out with a bang. He's either going to be a genius way he develops Kyler Murray, or he's going to be back up in the TV booth. Or maybe John Elway at 10 could take him, even though they just traded for Joe Flacco. I think those are the only two teams before Washington that would take Kyler Murray. I don't think the Miami Dolphins are going to take him. I think the Dolphins will go with the defensive player and then get their quarterback next year.
Hmm. Tony, how high are you on Drew Lock and also Daniel Jones?
Not a big fan of Drew Lock. Drew Lock at the top of his game is as good as any quarterback in this draft. The problem is he's only at the top of his game a small percentage of the time.
Mm.
I mean, he makes some incredible passes.
Yes.
That you're just like, wow. But for every incredible pass he makes, he just follows it up with three or four or five plays that you're wondering, what the heck is he thinking? What is he doing? Go back to the Alabama game. I tell everybody about this. Yeah, this is typical Drew Lock. I mean, he made a throw in the end zone that was incredible, where the ball sailed 40, 45 yards in the air with speed. He threw it in the corner of the end zone. He threw his receiver free. It was a tremendous pass that only a few quarterbacks in the league can make. And then on the next series of downs, Alabama rushes him. He looks like a deer in headlights. He just dropped the ball. And, I mean, there's just too much inconsistency in Drew Lock's game. The best way to say it is he's got a high upside, but he's got a huge bust factor, probably a bigger bust factor than Kyler Murray. I like Daniel Jones. I like his game. He plays an NFL style of football. He was well coached in college by a terrific college coach who has developed quarterbacks over the years. I just think that Daniel Jones may be a year or two away.
Cutcliffe, we were talking about Manning earlier.
That's right, yeah, David Cutcliffe. So you think those are the three guys that will go into first round? Do you think anybody else creeps into the first, quarterback-wise?
Well, Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State.
Oh, yeah. And Haskins, right. Yeah. So you think four, is that four in the first round for you, or how many quarterbacks first round?
It's going to be three or four. I think a fourth guy could go late or a team's drafting late. You know, the New England Patriots could take Daniel Jones late because that seems like a Patriots type of quarterback, a smart, heady guy who, you know, is maybe not the greatest athlete of the world, but makes as many plays with his head as he does with his physical skills. I do think that you could see four quarterbacks in round one, which if you had asked me this a month and a half ago, I would have said, no, you're probably going to get two.
Right.
We're expecting an Austin here for Charles Omenihu to be the first Longhorn to come off the board. What have you seen when you look at his film, and where do you see him going?
He's a very good player who basically has to just physically mature and add strength to his frame. You know, he's a good pass rusher. He's not a great edge rusher. He gives a lot of effort against the run, but he doesn't have the big body. At times, he's easily blocked from the action. He makes as many plays with his heart and his head as he does with his physical ability.
Hmm.
I could see him going in that third round area, maybe slides to the fourth round. He's a defensive end in a 4-3, and in time, I think he's going to be a very good player at the next level.
Interesting. All right, what about Chris Boyd? Still defensive side of the ball, but the back end of the defense, he did not have a great showing at the Senior Bowl. What do you think of Boyd after looking at film?
Yeah, and you're being kind about Boyd at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
The problem is he can't make plays with his back to the ball. He has to face the action. You know, I love his feistiness. I love his aggressiveness. I like the way he comes up and belts ball carriers and works to get through blocks to make plays against the screen passes. But when his back is to the ball, it's a totally different game. I think you've got to put him in his own system. Maybe you line him up, backed off the line of scrimmage. Want to see how fast he runs at the combine. But right now you're looking in the late rounds for Boyd.
I know last time we talked to you, you said that you had talked to someone about Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson and also Chris Nelson, what are you seeing and what are you hearing?
Yeah, Johnson is just a terrific athlete. The problem with him is size. You know, he is just fast. He's explosive. He's a lot what teams like in an inside linebacker these days, a guy who can get from point A to point B real quickly and make the play. The issue, and he gives effort in coverage situations. The issue with him is he's built more like a safety than he is a linebacker, so there's going to be some mismatches. But I could see him, you know, being a third-day pick somewhere in that fourth, fifth round area, a guy who's going to back up on the inside and play special teams. Chris Nelson he's a good gap occupier. He's a guy who is probably going to play nose tackle in a one-gap sort of scheme, not a real playmaker, a guy who does better occupying the gaps than he does making plays on the ball.
Plus, if he rubs his belly in celebration, they don't throw a flag in the NFL anymore.
That's true.
He gets to celebrate a little bit, so that could be good. We're talking with Tony Pauline, draftanalyst.com. Offensive side of the ball, Tony, little Jordan Humphrey was so good and freakish that it kind of redefined what Tom Herman and his staff thought about a slot receiver because he spent a lot of time there. How do you think he translates to the NFL?
Want to see how fast he runs at the combine, but, you know, he's a terrific receiver. He's a terrific pass catcher, and he knows it. I mean, he plays with that sort of cocky style. He's not afraid to go up and get the ball. He comes away with the contested grab. He works the middle of the field well. He's got to improve his route running. He's got to improve his focus. He does have some lapses in concentration once in a while. You want to look at the combine. You want to see not only what his 40 time is, but what his 10 split is, and what his shuttle times are, because that's going to tell you what kind of route running potential he has at the next level, as well as the ability to get off the line of scrimmage. With the bigger receivers, it's more than just winning out for the 50-50 passes, winning out for the contested throws on Saturday. They got to show the ability to get separation at the next level, because the best cornerback that little Jordan Humphrey played against on Saturday is probably going to be a nickel or dime back in the NFL, as opposed to the starters that he's going to be lined up against.
Some guys that were good college football players and definitely helped Texas get to 10 wins this year, but I'm curious how they're going to translate. Trey Watson, Calvin Anderson, and Andrew Beck. What do you see from them? Are they free agents?
Andrew Beck, I think, could slide into the sixth round. He is a terrific potential third tight end at the next level. Outstanding blocker, catches the ball well. He's not a guy who's going to split the seam and get down the middle of the field consistently 30 or 40 yards, but when you throw him the ball, he's going to catch it. He's a guy that you can put on the field in third and three situations. You can use him as a run blocker. You can use him as an intermediate range passer. I'll tell you one guy from Texas that a lot of people don't talk about that really intrigues me is Calvin Anderson, the left tackle, the graduate transfer from Rice, who I thought did an outstanding job at left tackle this year, wasn't even on the scouting radar. I don't know that he's going to get drafted. He may be able to slide into the late rounds if he has good workouts prior to the draft, but he's the guy who is going to be scooped up right after the draft is over. Worst case scenario, I think Calvin Anderson makes a practice squad next year.
Interesting. And then a couple other names, Brecken Hager and Devontae Davis. Anything on them?
Hager is just an intense guy. I mean, he plays like his hair is on fire. He's not the greatest athlete in the world, but he plays very athletic football, and that he makes plays all over the place, behind the line of scrimmage, out in pursuit. I think you're looking at him as maybe an eighth linebacker in a 3-4 system or a seventh defensive end in a 4-3 alignment. He's going to have to do well on special teams to make it out at the next level. Davis has got the size that you want in a cornerback. He's also got the athleticism. Just has to improve his ball skills. He's got to improve his fundamentals. A guy who, you know, flashes ability but needs consistency.
Tony, as we were getting you on, I pulled up a random mock draft. It starts with Quinnen Williams, Nick Bosa, and Josh Allen. I think I've seen mock drafts with each of those guys as the number one pick. Is there one of these defensive guys that really stands out to you where you think, okay, he's got to be number one, or is it really a group of, say, four or five that whoever picks number one is going to get a good player?
I like Quinnen Williams myself. I like Quinnen Williams for a couple of reasons. I think he's a three-down player, a terrific run defender who can occupy the gaps and also rush the passer from the inside. I think he's a guy that you can also line up in three-man fronts. I think he's someone who improved weekly last year and was just more dominant and dominant as the season progressed. Did not have a national championship game, which a lot of people remembered, but I think you can do so many things with Quinnen Williams. You know, I like Josh Allen. People keep mocking him to the New York Jets, but when I watch Josh Allen play, he's a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's not a defensive end. The Jets play a four-man line. I just don't see Josh Allen going that high because all the teams at the top of the draft play four-man lines, and I think Josh Allen's going to have to be an outside linebacker in a 3-4.
I've seen some of these mocks, Rashawn Gary going as high as top five, and then some people saying, I don't have him as a top eight defensive lineman in this draft. What do you think about him?
I think he was much better in 2017 than he was in 2018, in large part because of the shoulder injury last year. You know, to get the true feel of Rashawn Gary, you can't just watch him this year. You got to go back at 2017 because he's got great size. He's a terrific edge rusher. He's very explosive. He's a guy who, in time, could be a good run defender. I see him definitely as a top eight pick, potentially as a top five pick, depending on how it plays out. I think he's definitely worth it. But again, you know, just don't go based off the 2018 film. Look at his body of work. Look at what he did in 2017.
Talking about Tony Pauline of DraftAnalyst.com. Tony, as you go over film and look at all these guys, Houston Texans fans that are listening right now know they have the 23rd pick in the draft. I've seen mocks with offensive line, and then there's mocks with defensive backs. If Bill O'Brien calls you, any direction you'd tell him to go?
You know, I'd say, I'm going to say, you know, if a good offensive lineman is there, you got to jump on him. But I'd say, you know what, maybe a tight end. If a guy like Irv Smith of Alabama is there, I think that's a guy that would fit their profile and really fill a need for them.
Well, I've seen T.J. Hockenson, the two Iowa guys, Noah Fant going in the first round. I've seen Irv kind of all over the place. It does seem like it's a deeper draft for tight ends. Where do you have Irv compared to those guys, and who else would be around there for maybe those Cowboys to take later on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good tight end class primarily because of the underclassmen that entered the draft. When you look at the tight end board. Eight of the top ten tight ends are actually. I'm sorry, no, not nine of the top ten tight ends are underclassmen. So I think it's going to be Hockenson. I do like Irv Smith more than I like Noah Fant because I think Smith is more of a downfield tight end. When you get to where the Cowboys are drafting, you're looking at a somewhat local kid in Jay Sternberger of Texas A&M. who was well-traveled and really showed well last year for the Aggies. Potentially Dawson Knox of Mississippi, a guy who wasn't really all that involved in the offense, but he's got great athleticism, great upside. If they want a bigger tight end, a stouter tight end, a guy who is as effective as a blocker as he's a pass catcher, Zach Gentry of Michigan, 6'7", 255 pounds, you know, sort of like the kid we mentioned from Texas, Andrew Beck, is a little bit faster than Andrew Beck, but he's not a true seam stretcher. But he's going to catch the ball down the field when it's thrown to him, and he's got a great height advantage.
And another local kid, too, Keenan Brown, I've heard about from Texas State, seems to be more of a pass catcher. What do you like about him?
Yeah, very athletic, decent size. I think he's more of a late-round selection, a developmental type guy that you're going to stick on the practice squad for a year or two. But he's got a lot of skill. You just have to harvest it.
Okay.
Tony, are any of these Clemson defensive linemen going to disappoint in the NFL, or do they all have a place and you think they're all going to shine?
If there's one who's going to disappoint, I think it's going to be Dexter Lawrence. I like all of them. I think Christian Wilkins is underrated. I think Cleveland Farrell is ridiculously underrated. He's been a good player for 3 years. Dexter Lawrence, to me, when I watch him on film, he can dominate. He's a big-bodied guy that's got some athleticism. But all too often, he just gets by on his big body and his athleticism. He doesn't get by on good football fundamentals. At times, he plays a little bit too tall, which makes him easily neutralized at the point of attack by single blockers when he should be running over opponents. You know, he had the situation at the end of the season where he was suspended because of PEDs. You got to wonder why a guy that big is taking growth hormones or PEDs instead of working on his game. To answer your question, the only guy that I think really fits that bill would be Dexter Lawrence.
Okay. Interesting. How deep is this class for cornerbacks, and who are your top guys?
It's not really a good cornerback class per se. The top guy is obviously Greedy Williams of LSU. He's got terrific size. He's got good ball skills. He's got a developing game. Then you got Brian Murphy of Washington, much shorter. He's going to be probably under 5'10 and a half, but he's a great playmaker, outstanding ball skills. I like Trayvon Mullen of Clemson. He could slide into the late part of round one. Another guy with excellent size. Really wasn't challenged that much at Clemson this year because he's so good, but he's got a great upside. After that, it really falls off. You're looking at second-round guys, Julian Love, Notre Dame, DeAndre Baker, Georgia, Rocky Asin from Temple, who are more nickelbacks at the next level.
Tony, I love it when a guy from a smaller school can make a name for himself and maybe even climb into the first round. Talk to me about Jalen Ferguson of Louisiana Tech. Everything I'm seeing from him, going through the Senior Bowl stuff and workouts, looks like it's pretty good. I've heard good things. What do you think of him?
Yeah, I don't think he performed at the Senior Bowl as many expected, but he's a tremendous pass rusher. He's an incredible athlete. He's a lot like Marcus Davenport from Texas San Antonio. That's who people compare him to, I think rightfully so. He could come out of a three-point stance and a four-man line. If you want to use a three-man line and stand him up over tackle, he'll do a good job. He's got some growth potential. instincts are a little bit questionable. I think that whole thing with him, with the combine pulling his invitation because of a fight that happened 4.5 years ago before he entered classes at Louisiana Tech was a farce. Really was the wrong thing to do with the kid. I think he's somebody that you just got to get physically stronger. You're going to use him as a situational pass rusher as a rookie, and he'll get better as time goes on.
Well, I've seen Josh Jacobs, David Montgomery, and Elijah Holyfield a lot. I've not seen a bunch of Devin Singletary, who's from Florida Atlantic. I've seen him as a lot of people's number one running back. Where do you have him on your list, and what kind of back is he?
Yeah, I don't think he's definitely not number one on my list. Right now he's number five on my list. He's a bit of a smaller guy. He's quick. He's elusive. He creates a lot of yardage. He's the kind of guy you can give him the ball in space, and he's going to do a good job for you. You want to run, if you're going to use him on the inside, you're going to have to have a good blocking game, a zone blocking scheme, so he can pick and choose his spots. You know, if there's a sleeper at the running back position, I think it's Darrell Henderson of Memphis, who a lot of people compare to Devonta Freeman of the Atlanta Falcons, because he's a guy who, you know, combines the creativeness that Singletary shows with just outstanding explosion and the ability to run to daylight in the open field.
Would you gamble on like a Bryce Love maybe, late, very late?
It would have to be very late, like the fifth, sixth roundish or so. I absolutely would. You know, the thing about Bryce Love coming into the season that concerned me the most was the number of carries he had. He had close to 600 carries, or even more than 600 carries, before the season began, and you wondered the toll that was going to take on his body. Didn't have the good year season, you know, was kind of injured, which limited his carries, then had the knee injury. The fact is this, he's a terrific ball carrier that's very creative, doesn't have the great size, but someone who can turn the perimeter, someone who's a good pass catcher out of the backfield, more of a situational runner. And I think what happens is once you get into that fifth round area, the value becomes too great for Bryce Love.
That is Tony Pauline. Check out draftanalyst.com. He's on Twitter at Tony Pauline. Tony, we always appreciate the time, man. We'll try to catch up with you after the combine and as we're looking forward to the draft.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Thanks, Tony. Man. Great stuff.
Yeah, really good stuff there. Interesting. Kyler Murray thinks Denver or Washington, doesn't think Miami would take the shot, and obviously doesn't think Arizona is going to take the shot at number one.
You okay over there? That Sternberger? That'd be a great fit.
I would love it. I would love it. I'm not going to get too excited. I'm going to try not to get too pumped about that one, but it would fit.
I've been in that situation, too, where not only is it, like when they took Connor Williams, you probably liked it because of value, and, and hey, we can use some help there, we'll see how it works, and still give that thing some time, but that's just an obvious fit.
It's something they need to come out of the draft with. I was looking at picks earlier, everybody's talked about how many picks the Raiders have, and how many picks the Patriots have, and all that. The Cowboys have 5 picks total. Total in this draft. They don't pick in the first round, and then there's like the first and sixth. I think they don't have a pick, but 5 total picks. And to me, they have to come out of it with a tight end. I hope they do. A couple years ago, there was they have to come out of it with a running back, and they didn't figure that part out. So they eventually got their running back, obviously. But yeah, I would love that fit. This is a nice, solid draft for tight ends. And he brings up a great point. It's tight ends that are coming out early.
Mm-hmm.
It's valuing that position so much that these kids are getting done with junior years and saying, you know what, I'm going now because the NFL loves my position.
Yeah, Hawkinson's the freak. He's a blocker, dynamic athlete. He can do a lot of things. He's just very athletic. Noah Fant, I believe, is the one that is really more of a pass catcher.
And both are the Iowa kids, right?
And both of the Iowa kids. Sternberger's up there. Irv Smith. Caden Smith, who played with my nephew at Flower Mound Marcus.
Dude, I love Irv Smith. I love the way Bama would use him at times. And you'd forget about him because of all those other weapons. But I dig that guy.
And really, these are all different guys. Irv Smith's a guy who's more going to, once he gets his speed going for his size, it's pretty good. But he's more going to work in the middle and has a good feel.
Right.
Has a good feel. His dad had a pretty good feel for that. Keenan Brown's a guy I mentioned from Texas State who apparently is.
That's a guy I haven't heard a lot
of
about.
Flex guy. But yeah, there's a lot of guys. I mean, heck, I've seen him listed ahead of Isaac Nada.
Wow. Okay. That's right. And Nada's coming out, the Georgia kid. Another guy that's coming out early at the tight end position. All right, big three coming up, including Carolina and Duke and a weird blown-out shoe from last night. Rod Babers joins us for the Longhorn Insider segment. Right now, I'm going to tell you about sinus and snoring specialist. Dr. Slaughter can get you breathing right and sleeping better and feeling better, and he can get rid of your allergies, too. Over 20 years of experience offering the very latest in ear, nose, and throat technology. Be sure to hit that allergy center because they can test you for 50 different allergies at once without needles. If you go through it every year, you have bouts, at certain times of the year, whatever it is, they can get a special treatment for you. These allergy drops, it'll be totally different from mine, obviously, because your allergies are different from mine, that will help you get rid of those allergies for good. My first exam, it took less than an hour. Dr. Slaughter prides himself on meeting you on the first consultation, but also making sure he's on time as well, because he knows you've got things to do. They work with most insurance, and the allergy test, as I mentioned, is done without needles. So call and set up an appointment today, 512-601-0303, or go to sinussnoringent.com. It's Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Feel clear, rested, and healthy. Got a little college basketball for you tonight as well. Also, the NBA back on a Thursday night. We'll get you some of that, too. It's the Horn.
Now that I got the money, 50 acres and a Model A, right in the middle of Trump country.
Chad and Kevin with you on a Thursday. All right, so, Trey, this is the song that Gary Clark Jr. did second at SNL. But he did a cleaned up version of it because it has some suggestive language in it in the original. Is that correct?
Suggestive is probably putting it a little light. It's a song that expresses some of Gary's frustrations, and he speaks for others, I think, too, at the same time. The song is called This Land.
Title track.
Edited it pretty heavily for Saturday Night Live, I guess. And it's another one of the new songs off of the album that comes out tomorrow.
I dig it.
I will give him credit. Yeah, it's great. And I'll give him credit because he had to clean it up. But I could still feel it, man. I could still feel the intensity of that song, the anger of that song. And I cannot wait to hear the actual. Trey played me a little bit of the original. I'm like, oh, my God, I've got even more language coming and more anger coming. That's fantastic.
That'd be a fun one to see live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good. That is good stuff. New album hits tomorrow, so we'll have some more Gary Clark Jr. for us. And we've been informed today that Trey's not with us tomorrow, and Brad Kellner's producing the show. I'm still not quite believing it.
Uh-oh.
I think Trey's setting us up. I think it may be a bit or a process, and it may be a joke.
No.
But he says
no bit. I'm having to miss three Fridays in a row, guys. I was trying to avoid getting a board op for the second of the three, so instead Brad and I are switching shifts.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to miss next Friday as well. Just letting you know that right
now. So you're producing Bucky and Aaron in the morning is what you're saying.
That's right.
Okay. Fair enough. All
Hopefully
right.
Hopefully I don't lock myself out of the building this time like what happened last time.
Yeah, let's hope.
Did you do that last time?
Yeah, Aaron had to run outside with Bucky just killing time for the first few minutes to figure out what the heck happened to me.
Where the heck is he? All right, let's get you a quick Big Three and then we'll talk to Rod Babers.
The Big Three.
It's brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Dan Slaughter, 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com. We'll make it all college basketball. Carolina beat Duke last night, 88-72. We talked about that. A tragic story involving a famous college basketball coach, Jim Boeheim, driving a car last night after the Syracuse win. There was another accident, and then people were getting out of cars, and it was nighttime, and they say there were no alcohol involved, no drugs, none of that.
Not speeding?
Yeah, not excessive speed.
Well, they've been having snow.
But the weather's crazy up there, so this guy gets out, and the car, Boeheim, the wife, and friends are in the car. They end up hitting and killing a 51-year-old man.
Just awful.
Oh, it's terrible.
Just awful. Speaking of Brad, had an experience like that.
Really?
Well, not that long ago. Remember Hero 360 when he's coming?
Did he hit someone?
No, he didn't hit someone, but he came up on someone who I guess was pulled to the side. Then he got hit, and the guy died.
Oh, yes. Okay, I remember that now. Those are scary stories,
just incredibly scary.
Yeah, that's scary stuff.
Just sad.
And then the one other thing we have... There were listeners reminding us,
yes.
Big game tonight down south?
They're going to have a pretty big one. It's going to be a blackout in San Marcos, Texas State. They've had a really good year. I don't know if you've been following Texas State. And then also, I got to give, speaking of Aaron, got to give the Hilltoppers some love. They are the Hilltoppers, right?
They are the Hilltoppers.
St. Edward's
That's
is
right.
having a really good year. Saw a local piece on them. But let's focus on Texas State right now. 21-5. They are 10-3. They're leading the Sun Belt. They're a game ahead of Georgia State. And they've got Louisiana Monroe coming in. So I've heard that's a pretty fun team to watch and that they've been getting into it.
There you go. Go check out those Bobcats tonight if you want. There's your big three. Rod Babers joins us for the Longhorn Insider segment. Rod, Kevin mentioned it, I guess, last hour when we briefly were talking about the whole A&M AD thing and all that. I'm trying to remember, you as a former player, do you want them to play? Or do you, to a point where you think maybe they're both better off not playing?
I would like to see them play, but like I said, I'm not particularly that passionate about it. So I totally understand why both those sides can move on. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's going to come back when... It's going to come back by popular demand. It's going to come back when the fans feel like they need the rivalry to define the essence of, you know, the fandom of their university. And I don't think any side
is there
yet.
You don't want to admit that, do you?
No.
Well, that's what true rivalries are. That's what the great ones are. The great ones
I don't feel that either for Texas.
Yeah, like Texas OU, we are certain – there's a certain part of Texas fans that are defined by that game and defined by that rivalry. That's how great rivalries – that's how they – you North Carolina Duke. That's why it matters, right?
Right.
So –
No, Luke May's in the books now after last night, right?
Yeah, but I think, and I always say great, great football programs and blue blood football programs should have more than one rival. Texas should have more than one rival. They should. But yeah.
According to a lot of other teams, they do. But according to Texas, right. They just have one.
They just have one. But they really only have one, yeah, but now the eggs are there.
But this really isn't just a Texas problem. It's really, you see this all across the country because of the shift that we've had with different conferences.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It probably won't. They're on the break, like Ross and Rachel. That's what Craig would always say. So, he's right. I think we're just on the break. The break is going to last a lot longer than I think we anticipate.
At least 10 more years.
Tom Herman and Jimbo Fisher won't be coaching by the time they play again. There you go.
Right. Yeah. Tom Herman has said.
You know what I mean? Like, realistically.
Right. Realistically, you're right.
You're right. No, because Tom Herman has said.
Both of them won't be
but
there.
But neither one of them. Right. And no matter how good both of them are, they won't play. They won't be coaches by the time Texas.
But definitely it'd be hard to think both of them actually being the coach there.
Exactly.
Right,
Rod B will probably have a teenage son by the time Texas A&M play again.
Whoa. What's going on?
No, I'm just saying that's how long down the line it's probably going to happen. Yeah. Like, I got 13 years, so
yeah,
all right.
Time.
I got a little time. What are you trying to do, man?
Listening to these
get you in trouble.
I had a strange analogy pop in my head today. Listening to these two sides talk about whether or not they're going to play moving forward is like when I hear the NFL people say, we need to hear more about the science when they talk about head injuries. It's like, no, all of the information's out there. You all have the information. If you either want to do it or you don't. Like, I don't understand where...
They still need studies from I guess, acclaimed doctors and scientists about marijuana.
That, too. There's the other discussion,
right? Oh, yeah,
right?
The marijuana discussion. Yeah,
that's true. Same thing.
Are we over that yet?
Yeah. Same exact thing.
It doesn't seem like it, no. There's still some people
out
there.
Kevin, I just don't think anyone's done enough research.
I just need
them to do more research.
What?
And coincidentally, very interestingly, a lot of that is turned once they see the money they can make off of it.
It has been all about the morals for you, huh?
And you know what? Great point. That is what's interesting, even in legalized sports betting, right? People are like, man, $1.2 billion New Jersey made in 7 months? We want some of that. So, yeah, for Texas and Texas A&M, I'm really changing my thought on this. Right? But there's a ton of money to be made. I mean, tons of rivers of it. But that has not, moved either side. So it's deeper than that with this specific situation. But I'm with you. Usually they see the money and that's when they decide, you know what? I think medicinal marijuana is the way to go on this, guys. I've seen the light.
Right. But then again, the states that are doing really bad right now are the ones that are thinking, man, I know it's not doesn't fit us, but we need this.
We need it.
Whereas I'm not sure either of these programs need it money-wise right now.
It's like Texas, right? Texas, the economy in Texas, they don't need medicinal marijuana
or
legalized sports banning. But it'd be great. You could...
But if we did, I'd like to see exactly some of those minds change.
I think we could. The state would get out of debt in the record
boom.
Time. Yeah.
Boom. So now you guys were both students at Texas. Obviously, I was a student at A&M back in the day. I'm told by my niece that the A&M students are being asked about this.
Oh, yeah, this is
fun. She says she has talked to students that she thought would be not interested, but they're legacy kids. They have people that have been to the school before.
Yeah.
So ultimately, right now, if you had the poll at both schools, do you think students in 2019 would say yes to this?
Yes. Mm. Yeah, they would. Texas students already, I think. Yeah, they did a poll with Texas a couple of years ago, and I think they voted overwhelmingly that they wanted to.
I'm interested to hear what the Aggie students say. She also told me this. A couple of the guys she knows that are running for Yell Leader, because they vote on Yell Leaders.
That's right, yeah.
Those guys want it.
They
and I'm like,
it, huh?
Really?
Yeah.
Guys that want to be Yell Leaders coming up want to play Texas.
Why does that surprise you?
It's just ever since 2010, there's been this move. Aura yeah. around Aggies of, we don't need to play them anymore. We're going to go do our own thing. We're going to go be in the SEC, and we never need – I've had Aggies of all ages tell me, Chad, I don't care if we ever play them again. My dad says it to me all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't care to play Texas anymore.
Yeah.
And it amazes me. So in a way, I'm kind of encouraged by the idea that there's some kids
Agreed.
On that campus right now saying, you know what, I think they need to play.
And maybe it's an age thing, because I really don't care if we play y'all.
You know what, maybe it is, because I'm older, and I'm kind of in the middle. I'm not like your dad, but I don't really care. So maybe the older generation, like your dad, Chad, they're like, I don't want to play them. I'm done with those Aggies. We've had our fill of them.
Yeah.
And us, the middle generation, like, are like, eh, I don't really care. Either way,
if we did,
it'll be fine.
The
and the young people are like, ooh, let's do it. They've never experienced it. They're like, ooh, I want to see it. It would be really great.
We're going to be getting up at 7 a.m. and marching for it at the Capitol. Are you going to be there, Kev? No. If it happens, great.
And that's
whatever.
What I said. The only way it's going to come back is if they do stuff like that. If they start, you know, letter writing campaigns and sending emails and calling the politicians. And that's the only way it's going to come back, by popular demand. Otherwise, I'm with you. I think everybody's like, nah, we're good.
Yeah.
There's not enough passion on either side to bring it back. So I think right now it's the Texas Cold War continues.
We're breaking your heart, aren't we?
Yeah, a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You're just breaking the kid that lives inside of me's heart. Because like I said to Rod during Crosstalk today, I have the argument for why both schools should say no is crystal clear to me in 2019, based on scheduling and what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Because both of them can make this argument. Like I said earlier, if Texas beats LSU and Oklahoma this year, they don't need to play the Aggies.
Yeah.
And if A&M somehow goes to Clemson and pulls off an upset.
Or beats Bama.
And then finds a way to beat Bama.
Right.
Beat LSU again, or whatever that is, right? They don't need to play Texas on top of that.
Yeah.
They can get to where they want to go. Each of them can get to where they want to go, and then it would be that. It would be the power of a playoff or a massive bowl game that might get them on the same field
again. For the first time in the Texas Cold War, the argument against both of the teams playing is stronger than the argument for the teams playing each other.
Mm.
See, now
well
you're making
said,
me
yeah.
sad.
You know what I mean?
No, I think you're right, though.
Yeah.
I guess for me, we get it in baseball. That's good enough.
Baseball,
that's true. Yeah.
Other sports, too.
Other sports do it.
Yeah, we get it
basketball,
in other
you've had it, yeah.
Augie and Rob figured it out.
I think we should do the flag football game, man. We do old school Longhorns like me and like Vince Young and Jamal Charles. We do a flag football game. We draft our own team.
Great.
A team major or a team Sims, whatever, and then we go play the damn Aggies. And go play y'all at Charles
that
spot.
That doesn't come close to the two teams actually meeting on the field in college.
Oh, no.
He didn't say it didn't come
not.
Close.
I know it, but I'm just saying.
Would you watch it, Trey?
What? No.
What does the winner
you
get?
You know. What does the winner get?
Got a friend and a coworker.
That's good.
Or
it's got to be something good. I don't know what it could be. But it's
bag
be
of,
something
bag
good.
Of money?
It's got to be something. No, it's got to be something deeper than that. I don't know. That's good, though. What does
yeah.
the winner get?
What does the winner
Everything
get?
Everything goes to charity, though, of course. All the proceeds.
Yeah.
Chris Del Conte, get on that, CDC.
You get whatever is in that bag that Ramon's Taylor has.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take that bag. Someone secure in the bag.
That's Rod Babers. Be careful in traffic out there. It is cool and crisp today. No precipitation, right? It's not raining out there. I think Rod's good. Everybody be careful out there in traffic. Rod Babers, weekdays 1 to 3 with the Rodcast, and he is in with us 3:30 and 4:30. Coming up next, it is your turn to jump in on the Afternoon Blitz. Dial 447-3776 if you're not already in line. We'll get you a blitz, and then Kevin will get you one and done on the horn.
The Horns text line is brought to you by Specs, your tailgating headquarters with a Texas size selection of lower priced everything. Cheers to savings.
The Blitz.
All right, let's get an afternoon blitz going. 447-3776. First blitzer on a, what is today, Thursday. You're up.
Yeah, initially Jim Boeheim was cited with reckless driving, but after review, it was determined the man's feet weren't set, so they waved it off.
Come on. Rex Chapman with a call. Come on,
dude, the man's dead. Blitzer number two, you're up.
Don Cheadle should be Virgil in the Hulk Hogan movie.
Wow. Blitzer,
is that for you?
That was for me, and Rod Babers brought up a discussion earlier. Blitzer number three, you're up.
I wonder what brought on the about face with A&M. Maybe it's because Texas is scamming on their squirrel in the SEC after thrashing Ole Miss and Georgia and now LSU next year.
Wow.
Calling the LSU shot.
How about that? Blitzer number four, you're up.
This is Sand Ellinger. Catch you on the court. Go easy on my AC joint, though.
Yeah, be careful on that.
That left one.
Yeah,
it's a left for Sand Ellinger. He was talking about Sand Ellinger, not Sand Ellinger.
Sand Ellinger is Trey. That's
different,
right.
Different AC joint.
Different AC. A very different AC. And finally, blitzer number five, you're up.
And that's the story of Mike Matheny and the bird poop.
Fair enough.
Not bad.
Yeah, so the comment about Don Cheadle was they're going to make a Netflix, I think, movie about Hulk Hogan's life. Chris Hemsworth is playing Hulk Hogan, and Rod Babers was asking about who would you cast as other people around Hulk Hogan.
Mm.
So, yeah, there was all of that kind of discussion today on the Rodcast.
Who plays the daughter's boyfriend? maybe the Smollett guy or whatever in Chicago?
Not Don Cheadle.
Not Don Cheadle.
Not Don Cheadle.
Idris Elba? That'd be my choice. Denzel? Nah, too old. Yeah, you got to find the right guy. Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan could play the boyfriend.
Okay.
He could probably make that work. The kid from Creed. All right, let's go one and done here. I think we're sponsored.
This segment brought to you by Texas Card House. With an all-new tournament lineup for 2019, $5K guaranteed on Monday and Wednesday nights, $10K and $20K guarantees on Sunday. Check out the full calendar at texascardhouse.com.
I'm sure they'll have a scene of Hogan in the bedroom, you know, when that the recording was made. It'll be great. Here's Kevin Dunn.
So obviously there was tons of talk about Zion and the fact that you've got number 8 on the road to take on number 1. The environment was great, but once Zion goes out, then we're all thinking, oh man, what is this going to look like? But hey, there's still a lot of talent on the court. Right? Keep on being told about all the talent that Duke has and these lottery picks. And we saw that. Barrett played well. I mean, he plays all 40 minutes, goes for 33. He had a triple, or not a triple double. He had a double double with the 13 rebounds. Reddish still played pretty well. But it's just what I see in basketball now today and in college basketball. And the second Zion goes out, and one of the things I love about Zion is that he does shoot 68%, and he does need to work on some things, but he's more about winning right now and more about getting things done, which is why you see him constantly around the basket, because with his size, that makes sense. You see what Duke was from beyond the arc? And Duke's behind in this game, so they're going to shoot a little bit more.
I didn't. It was not good.
20%.
Wow.
Okay. Carolina won this game, and they were 2 of 20 from beyond the arc. They shot 10%. The more you watch it, there's so many talented guys. I don't think the talent has changed, but the development. And the development isn't always there, but more importantly, how they're playing. Why, how do you go 2 of 20 and still win that thing by 16 against the number one team on the road, even with Zion out? And I go back and watch Carolina and OU last night, the 90 game, the regional game, the 8 seed Carolina, the 1 seed Oklahoma. And it was just better passing. It was better. There was just better basketball. There's no other way to put it. Shot making was better, but they weren't taking. The threes was the biggest thing that stood out. They just weren't taking these stupid threes to take them. It was about hesitations and poise and basketball IQ and cutting and anticipation. Some of the things we see here, but a lot of them that are just thrown away because we're going to jack up a three. And that's more of a sport problem where people like me, you can call me an old man, but a lot of people look at it and say, I just don't like the way that looks. Aesthetically, it's not pleasing.
Yeah, there was some bad stuff for the Duke stuff. It's ironic because I think of Duke as the team that was failing from beyond the arc last night. But you bring it up. I mean, both teams were terrible. And that's not what we're used to seeing, obviously, with those teams when they've been at their best.
Couple other things that I noticed from that game, that it was majority Texas crowd, and I was at that game, so I remember, that the 90 UNC-OU game and then the 94 Texas Southern Arkansas, and then Arkansas Syracuse game, the Lawrence Moten timeout game. Man, that place was loud. You can get this town. If you get it then, you can do it now. You can get this town to a basketball arena, but the product's got to be good. Yeah. And in those cases, there was a little extra twist. Talk about getting screwed, fed to the cats like a little mousy poo. Arkansas was not happy, and neither was Oklahoma, because those were true road games. At one point, Brent Musburger says in this Carolina game, folks, if you had any questions, this is a pro-Carolina crowd here in Austin.
They are leaning Tar Heels.
And it just reminded me, as we get ready for this new arena, that it is there. It's tougher, but it's there. And maybe it's just where we are in college basketball, where these are really good consumers and say, no, it ain't worth it. It's not good. I'm not going to show up. That may be the problem. And if that's the problem, you're right, and that's okay, and I don't know how you sell it. But people will go here in this town and get loud. But as I'm watching it, I think, well, this was damn good product in front of them, and you had that extra twist of, I've got someone to hate.
So back to your comment on threes, and I was watching it last night. We know that Golden State shoots a ton of threes. They make them, but they also set them up really well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they move and they cut.
Yeah. Is it just as simple as, like, Gene Hackman from Hoosiers, we're going to pass this many times before it happens? Isn't there a coaching gap that's happening here where you could talk to these teams and say, look, we have to set up better threes before I let you take them?
If we're on the shot clock here, at least have this many passes. Coaches have done that before. And look, it's trying to evolve with new basketball, and I get that. And things change. Things change in football. They change in really all the sports. But sometimes some things don't change that much when you're looking at numbers. I mean, the numbers are what they are. And Duke's has not been a good three-point shooting team all year.
No. True. Zion Williamson's not Zion Williamson because of threes.
Right. That Louisville comeback was an aberration.
That's true. They did hit a lot of threes that night.
They did, but I want to say they were under 30% as a team in ACC play.
Right, and they shot 60% in that particular game. But you're right. Yeah, that was a total blinking light.
It's just a question we ask a lot, and we ask it specifically with this team. How much control do you have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's coach? Where is coach?
It's a fair question. What is going on with the coach? All right, coming up, we'll talk about coaches and players and all kinds of Longhorn stuff with one of our favorites. It's Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. Baseball about to get it started at home. Basketball's got one on the road. I'd say a tough one on the road, but they got to go win this thing, right? That's coming up on the Horn.